Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Occupy Oakland turns violent. Occupy Portland gets mouthy. And one of the women accusing Howard Kane of sexual harassment got $45,000.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves, for this is Legion of News!
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor. And this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, November 3rd, 2011.
Lies!
And I've already made one mistake.
Howard Kane.
I know. I wrote down on my notes here, I scribbled down what I was going to say, and I put H. Kane, and I had this brain thing where I went, Harold? Howard? What is it?
Hincus?
Yeah, Herman. Herman Kane. Well, generally a peaceful demonstration in Oakland on Wednesday turned violent overnight, with police using tear gas for the second time in 2 weeks as officers clashed with a small group of demonstrators. The New York Times wrote of the scene, a roving group of about 100 mostly young men broke from the main group of protesters in a central plaza and roamed through downtown streets, spraying graffiti, burning garbage, and breaking windows. The police said some in the group briefly occupied a building on 16th Street near the port.
I don't think standing someplace is occupying it, really, as such. I think occupying is taken on an unacceptably generic term.
Well, they briefly occupied a building, so which means they were in it.
Does that mean that if I go to the post office, I'm briefly occupying the post office?
Yes, indeed.
Really?
Yes,
even if it's just to go like, hey, how do you get to the bank?
I think so. Any place okay. You are occupying that place.
My God.
Like, we are Occupy Portland right now, just simply by dint of being in Portland.
Okay, then.
Yeah. After the group failed to heed a warning to leave the building, which was reportedly vacant, riot gear-clad officers fired tear gas and beanbag rounds shortly after midnight local time. The Associated Press reports that, according to police, the protesters also threw concrete chunks, metal pipes, lit Roman candles, and even Molotov cocktails.
Why would you throw a lit Roman candle?
Just to make it more festive.
Oh, I see, because then if you just otherwise... Okay, because then
I mean,
just...
it was midnight, it was dark. If you're just throwing rocks and pipes, that's no fun.
Seems like the whole point of having a Roman candle is you don't have to throw it. It throws itself.
That's true.
You hold, it shoots.
Yeah. Maybe they threw the Roman candle. It causes more chaos that way, because it comes spinning at you and you don't know where it's going to shoot. It could shoot away from you. It could shoot in your face.
Are they using lit as a verb, perhaps, and not as a not as an adjective?
Oh. No, because it's in the middle of the sentence.
Yes, that would... Of course, there's no way that they would actually just violate grammatic laws.
If it was at the end of the sentence, because if it had said, they also threw concrete chunks, metal pipes, and even Molotov cocktails, comma, and lit Roman candles, then that would be a separate action. But it was in the middle of sentence, so therefore, they threw lit Roman candles.
I'm sure their clause construction is job one over there.
Right. Dozens of protesters were arrested, and a handful were hospitalized as a result of the clash. The building was cleared at around 2 a.m. local time. The latest bout of violence between Occupy Wall Street protesters in Oakland and police followed what had mostly been a peaceful demonstration early Wednesday, with demonstrators succeeding in temporarily shutting down the port of Oakland.
Here's the thing about it. Without leaving ideological partisanship out of this, and regardless of what side anyone is on in this particular issue, whether one sides with the hippies or the hard hats, as they used to say.
And now they are one of the same, by the way. The union guys are joining with the hippies.
Really?
Yes.
Is this going to be like
the longshoremen in Oakland were actually protesting with the Oakland hippies.
Is this going to be like how when Saruman takes goblins and orcs and breeds them together into one, and they can travel under the sun?
It is exactly that. We get Ents involved in this, and it is all over.
All right, then. Because I was going to say, is when they talk about, you know, they managed to occupy it for, like, I don't know, like a seventh week in a row or something, or just, you know, there's the second time that the police have gone through and that there's been some sort of a ruckus. Do we all sort of agree that at any point the government just decides to come and get you, you're gotten?
Well, yeah, we know that.
Okay, so they are just there at the leisure of the...
Yeah, we like to believe that we live in a country where we have freedom to congregate, freedom of expression, freedom to, you know, to walk about the public streets freely and whatnot. But we all know that that's not true.
Well, it's not really, it's not just in this country. It's sort of anywhere where there's a guy with a stick.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, all you have to do is decide that you want to go stand with a sign outside someplace that, say, the president is showing up.
Yeah.
And they herd you into a chain-link fenced enclosure five blocks away and tell you that's your designated protest zone. We all know that, no, we don't have the freedom to, like, walk and do what we like on the streets whenever we please.
Or decide to be born as a cow. Then it's just the air gun.
Yes.
What's up there? A treat?
Poor cows.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News.
I'm sad.
Here at Cascadia.fm. Really?
That made me sad.
The cows?
Yeah. The poor cow looking for a treat, and then he gets shot in the head.
I've got something that'll cheer you up.
Okay.
I don't.
Is it candy?
No.
Oh.
Wait, I have this.
Okay, that cheers me up.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, November 3rd, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news, also science on the march and whatnot. Here's Don Taylor.
There was some rampant tweeting action last night, by the way, regarding the Occupy Oakland violence. A car struck two Occupy Oakland protesters as they marched with the crowd along Broadway, and an angry mob surrounded the car while emergency workers tended to the injured. It immediately got, like, onto Twitter that someone in a Mercedes had run over a protester and killed them.
Okay. And that wasn't really the...
No, it wasn't. It was a Mercedes. But they basically, you know, there were hundreds of people screaming at him through his closed windows because apparently he made the mistake of going to the We Hate Rich People rally in his Mercedes, or she did. I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman. And anyway, was trying to get the hell out of there and hit two people who suffered leg and ankle injuries that were not life-threatening. They were taken to the hospital. They weren't killed. But for a while on Twitter, it was like, a Mercedes mowed down a protester, and they're dead now.
Here's the... I don't mean to be cynical about this sort of thing, but I mean the absolute proof... This is just my opinion. This is just my read on the situation. The opinions of Rick Emerson... As somebody once said, the opinions of Rick Emerson are correct, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they represent the views of everyone. The absolute proof that this isn't going to work and that it's not going to have any effect is that it's still happening. I mean, if the government really thought it was going to bring down the empire, if the government thought this was going to have any long-lasting or permanent impact, they would have broomed it out like a week ago. So the fact that it's still there indicates that nobody thinks it's a sufficient threat.
I think it's valid and it's valuable for
I didn't say it's not valid.
To,
you can do
yeah,
it.
To ex- I think it's great that so many people are expressing dissatisfaction that we're well, that's the thing, and that's the problem with it, is it's just stuff that we are fed up with the inequity, you know, of wealth in this country, and that it's causing problems, blah 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 blah. The problem is that, as you pointed out like a week or two ago, there's no end game. There's no concrete specific thing.
There is no specific goal
that they want done.
Yeah, there's
you
no
know?
List of demands.
When you're protesting against a war, it's fairly cut and dried. It's like, you know, please bring our troops home
right now
and end the freaking war. Here, it's like, we're just really unhappy because everything's so messed up.
Everything
with
sucks.
With the banks and the you know, the HMOs and the whatnot. So fix that now, please. You know, and it's kind of, it's a little bit
sort of it reduced my general sense of discomfort and unease with the current state of the union. Doesn't roll off the tongue.
I mean,
you don't really know how to.
At least in the '70s. In the UK.
God. Here we go.
No, I'm saying at least in the '70s in the UK
when I marched in Selma
was unhappy about this, we got punk rock out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
See, if we could get some like really great angry music out of this, then it might all be worthwhile.
Justin Bieber should totally go write a protest anthem and sing it on an acoustic guitar Bright Eyes style in front of the Occupy Portland.
Yes.
I will give you seriously. I will pay any amount of money if I can get just someone. How great would that be if, like, you could get him or just like Demi Lovato, to just go stand with a battered acoustic guitar that says like "This machine kills fascists" on it, and then put her fist in the air, sort of Black Power style, and sing some sort of rousing anthem in front of Occupy Oakland.
Yeah,
that'd be wonderful.
What is Miley Cyrus doing right now? I mean, come on, she could jump out and do this.
I'd be so happy. That would just make the entire thing worthwhile for me.
Bieber's all tied up with this whole getting some girl pregnant, you know, fiasco. So
Bieber. Okay.
Bieber. All right. Here on the home front, Occupy Portland protesters plan to march at 11 a.m. today. I gather it happened. Protesting a Portland visit by the head of Chase Bank, Jamie Dimon. Demon, what a great name for the CEO of J.P. Chase.
Wait, so
Morgan.
Hold on. So now they're not occupying Portland. Now no one else is allowed to come here.
No.
Okay.
No. In fact, that was, I'll mention that in a minute. Wednesday evening, protesters gathered at Terry Schrunk Plaza and started a march through downtown Portland around 5:30 p.m. Around 500 people marched through downtown, eventually making their way to the Hawthorne Bridge just before 7. The Lieutenant Pete Simpson with the Portland police said it appeared conditions during rush hour traffic were dangerous, so police were trying to get protesters mostly onto the sidewalks. Some sat down on the bridge, but no arrests were reported. On Facebook, KATU posted this thing where they asked, you know, how do you feel about these people disrupting rush hour traffic on the Hawthorne Bridge and nobody getting arrested? And so there's all these comments just going, I think it's terrible. I think they should all be arrested. You know, and then, of course, somebody just going, Obama should you know, or Sam Adams should be kicked out of
office. Because of the gays.
But I never, ever, ever contribute to these things. But in this case, I kind of felt like I had to. So I posted because they asked my opinion. And I said, you know, because that was the thing. Should we let people do this without being arrested? Was the way they phrased it.
Right.
And I said, you know, we let people, you know, take over city streets for parades and festivals and charity runs. And we even let rich people shut down the Hawthorne Bridge
for
a
brunch
party.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, making sure people can get places in this town is really a priority.
It's like it's without precedence that they inconvenience me so some dick can have a brie spread on, you know, can sit and have canapé on a Sunday morning.
Oh, but this one is out of line. This time when I can't get from point A to point B in this town, this time I put my foot down and I'm angry about it.
Well, these are...
How about every other weekend in this town during the summer?
These are grubby people, Don.
Yeah. They're angry. We don't like that. They're not on bikes wearing colorful hats.
They're not listening to enough Nora Jones.
Meanwhile, the union representing Portland police officers says last night's protest is a clear signal that things are getting out of control, and the union is demanding the police commissioner be held accountable. Sergeant Daryl Turner, the union president, says he's very concerned that officers and citizens will get hurt if large protests are allowed to continue. He says Wednesday's protest, as a police sergeant was pushed into a moving TriMet bus.
Wait, so who was pushed into what?
He says that during the protest, a cop was pushed into a moving TriMet bus.
What does that mean?
I think that there was a bus that was moving, like very, very slowly.
But not in front of it.
And somebody kind of pushed him up against the side of it because he said he wasn't hurt.
Okay, all right.
But a guy got arrested anyway for assaulting the police officer.
Yeah, just got to imagine that's going to happen.
Yeah. But
you could be giving a cop a manicure, and if he didn't ask for it, that's going to be... That's a night in the box.
But I think, you know, you look at the history of violence between protesters and cops here in Portland and in other cities. Look at what happened in Oakland. And it's quite hilarious that, you know, the police union is coming out and saying that things are getting way out of control here in Portland. Like, for example, several marchers refused to obey police orders and took over the streets. At one point, the protesters blocked part of the Hawthorne Bridge, forcing it to be closed.
Like in Oakland, they're busy firebombing things and making napalm.
Here we had the Hawthorne Bridge was unusable for a half an hour.
The flow of traffic was impeded ever so slightly for a period of 7 minutes. This cannot stand!
Bring in the SWAT team.
Seamus would like to know, who does Dawn post as when she participates in online comment threads?
Well, on Facebook, it's just me.
No, but on was this on K2.com or was it on their Facebook page?
This was on their Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
One of the women who accused Republican hopeful Herman Cain of sexual harassment back in the 1990s received a payout of roughly $45,000 as part of her settlement.
You sounded just real Canadian right there.
A payout. And she bought a nice hoose with that.
They don't say hoose. You can't just take any vowel and turn it sideways and make it Canadian.
Sure I can.
Okay.
That figure is noteworthy because it would appear to be substantially more than the 2 or 3 month salary that Cain has claimed that she was given to the woman, said to be a mid-level staffer at the trade group.
I'm so confused. Was there more than one woman?
Yes.
Because the one woman, they said, got a year's severance.
There are two women that are accusing him of sexual
harassment. Did they both get a year's severance, or did one get less?
This woman apparently got 2 or 3 months' salary as severance.
Maybe it was like one-fourth of the groping.
And it's also more than the $35,000 that the other woman reportedly received.
So confused.
The latest revelation comes as Cain scrambles to contain the fallout from the story by accusing Rick Perry's campaign of orchestrating the original investigative piece that first uncovered the allegations, which date Cain's tenure as president and CEO of the restaurant trade group. But the latest severance report will likely shift the attention back toward the inconsistencies of Cain's evolving version of events. He initially denied that he was aware of any settlement, then later, quote, gradually recalled that it happened. And by Wednesday, he had remembered enough to tell the media and the supporters that he had briefed a former advisor on the accusations and that the advisor was the one who leaked the story to Politico.
And by briefed, he means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the former aide to Cain denies that he leaked sexual harassment allegations. Kurt Anderson calls the accusations by Cain a diversionary tactic to shift the focus away from the harassment allegations.
Candidates, when they get into a firestorm like this, have, you know, sometimes come unraveled. And, you know, it seems to me that they're kind of grasping at straws.
You know, this is whatever. We used to live in a world of men, a world of honor, and now we've got like this guy who worked for Cain and then goes over to Perry and then immediately spills all of Cain's dreck. And Ed Rollins is doing the same thing for Michelle Bachmann. It used to be like some sort of code of ethics for political strategists.
No.
I think that was the case. I mean, the press saw Kennedy like putting Marilyn Monroe on all fours on the Oval Office desk and went, well, none of our business.
Yeah, but that wasn't the campaign guys.
Yeah.
See, there's a difference. If you're working on a campaign and trying to get your guy elected.
I blame Lee Atwater for all of this.
Kurt Anderson says Cain's campaign appears to be grasping at straws.
These guys are under tremendous stress in these situations, and so they're floundering and, you know, and maybe it's a diversionary tactic or something.
I thought maybe he meant that he was under tremendous stress as the CEO of Godfathers, and so occasionally a good grope is the only thing that's really going to put you at ease.
I don't think if you turn around and you say, okay, this thing from my past that got leaked to the press, I blame my primary political rival for doing this. I don't think that's a diversionary tactic.
No, it sounds like that may be an accurate assessment of the situation.
Yeah.
That's just my read.
Columnist Ruben Navarrete thinks there is a racial overtone.
Every time we have a prominent African-American man, the line of attack is this idea of sort of sexual prowess. It has a very familiar and awful ring to it.
Unless,
because white candidates never get the covers pulled on their sexual picadillos.
Never happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
Ever. Not at
no.
all.
No. Right. Or John Edwards.
Or what was that guy who he was president?
Yeah, what was his
Bill
name?
Something or other.
Yeah, he was a white man, wasn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah.
He was, in fact, well, on the outside.
And as I believe Pone Tony, our friend Keelan can tell you, that whole sexual prowess thing is actually true.
No, it's really, it's not a blanket stereotype without basis.
No, come on. We all know it's true.
It is just it's an accurate depiction of the scientific realities.
Mm-hmm. State officials in Washington say two proposed bids that would privatize.
He should just, I'm sorry, just back on the thing for a second. Wouldn't it be great? I mean, my whole life is just, the only reason I try to stay even moderately healthy and stay alive is just because I like to, you know, the longer you live, some people want to live because they want to see progress and they want to see, like, what we come up with and what new exciting new developments science creates and what new excursions into the furthest reaches of God's creation I just, it's like the longer I stay alive, the more the greater I increase my chances of just seeing somebody totally and completely unravel during a political election, because you just want to see, like, somebody do, like, the full Bullworth or whatever. Wouldn't it be great if Herman Cain just, like, if he just embraced the whole, like, I am a sex machine, is that a crime? And just, you know, like, what if he really just, yeah. I mean, like,
I have an enormous penis. I have to use it.
What am I supposed to do, hide my light under a bushel? And by light, I mean penis. I mean, just, you know, it's like putting a Mona Lisa in the attic. Yeah. It's there's just no, which Clinton kind of did. I mean, he never really came out and said it, but I think it was sort of inferred. It was sort of a wink here and a nudge there and a sort of, I just can't quit thinking about effing. What are you going to do? You know, and he just, and like we all kind of went, well, okay.
That Bill.
You know, I just, I would like to see someone just sort of, you know, really grab it and just sort of, yeah. You know, to own it.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Why not?
That's what I'm saying. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. State officials in Washington say two proposed bids that would privatize Washington's liquor distribution system are not financially beneficial. Governor Chris Gregoire's budget director, Marty Brown, ended the bidding process Wednesday by recommending that the state not accept either proposal. He said the proposals would have left the state with significant financial risks. The bidding process had moved parallel to a statewide initiative that voters are currently considering. Lawmakers had asked for the bids, which would privatize liquor distribution, but not the process of ordering, selling, or pricing the product. I have no idea what any of this means.
No idea.
The initiative on the ballot this month would privatize the whole system while increasing tax revenue by tens of millions of dollars per year for state and local governments. So they want to go to a horrible OLCC-style system, or they want to... I don't understand what they're doing.
I'm sorry. I was busy plucking a small hair off my shirt.
I noticed that.
No.
Yeah.
God, I couldn't... I realized
Are
early
you
on...
Now?
I wasn't going to understand anything in this story.
Unclean, unclean.
Leper, you got like two sentences in and my brain just went, look, we're never going to figure this out because really we're not all that bright. You got a white speck on your shirt, though. You should take care of that right away.
In a recent interview, President Obama was asked whether the country was better off than it was 4 years ago. Mr. Obama admitted the U.S. economy is still recovering, but said, quote, we're better off now than we would have been if I hadn't taken all the steps that we took. During a GOP news conference Wednesday, Speaker of the House John Boehner was asked if he agreed with this.
Are you kidding me?
That's wonderful. Wait, I think I got a longer version of that. Hold on.
Are you kidding me? Why don't you go ask the 14 million Americans who are out of work whether they're better off today than they were 4 years ago.
Yeah, suck that. Yeah. You should have just thrown the mic down Def Jam comedy style.
Yeah.
You know? I'm out! And just, you know, angrily pushed his way through the curtains to the backstage.
Let's do science.
Let's do some science here, shall we? Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Because there is science to do. All right, there we go. Awesome. Here's your science on the march for Thursday, November 3rd, 2011, here at Legion of News.
A prominent Dutch social psychologist who once claimed to have shown that the very act of thinking about eating meat makes people behave more selfishly has been found to have faked data throughout much of his career. In one of the worst cases of scientific fraud on record in the Netherlands, a review committee made up of some of the country's top scientists has found that University of Tilburg professor Diederik Stapel systematically falsified data to achieve the results he wanted. The university has fired the 45-year-old Stapel and plans to file fraud charges against him, according to university spokesman Walter Verhoeven. Stapel acknowledged in a statement the accusations were largely true. He wrote in an open letter, I have manipulated study data and fabricated investigations. I realize that via this behavior, I have left my direct colleagues stunned and angry and put my field, social psychology, in a poor light.
He should blame it on beef. He should say it's because he had a large rump roast, and therefore he was unable to control his selfish behavior.
This year, Stapel co-authored a paper published in Science magazine that said white people are more prone to discriminate against black people when they encounter them in a messy environment, such as one containing litter, abandoned bicycles, and broken sidewalks.
The paper... When exactly does that... Is that when you're just going to visit your many black friends who live in a landfill?
Yes.
I don't understand... It sounds like you're just going and visiting a guy who's in a dumpster. What does that mean?
I don't know. But the paper said, these findings considerably advance our knowledge of the impact of the physical environment on stereotyping and discrimination and have clear policy implications. I guess the idea is that...
If you see a guy living in a pile of trash, you're more likely to think less of him?
Or if you just know a black guy and he's got some stuff on his porch, you go, oh, black people.
I think if I visited the average Albanian and he was just living in a pile of refuse, I might go, no, this is the last time I come to this guy's house.
Science has now flagged the article with a note that to readers that, quote, serious concerns have been raised about the validity of the findings, unquote. Although the paper that linked thoughts of eating meat with antisocial behavior was met with scorn and disbelief when it was published in August, it took several doctoral candidates Staple was mentoring to unmask him.
But seriously, again, why would this even enter your head that you're going to test whether or not people think less of black guys if they're just living like in a wasteland somewhere?
I don't know.
You know, like, is that one of those things where they publish, like, are you looking, you know, we need part-time volunteers for a scientific experiment for which you will be compensated with a tasty sandwich. And then it's just sticking a black guy in a trash can.
Well,
okay, stay here all day.
Well, considering he made it all up, I mean, I guess, you know, he probably didn't do anything of the kind. He got caught on the meat-eating thing because three graduate students grew suspicious of the data he supplied them without allowing them to participate in any actual research. And when they ran statistical tests on it, they found it too perfect to be true and
right.
Went to the university's dean.
I'm just wondering who signed off on the research in the first place. Like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to put a black guy in an old stained mattress and I'm going to set him adrift in a garbage scow. And then we're going to see how people feel about him. And they went, okay, stamp, done.
Yeah. Well, then the thing about, you know, thinking about eating meat makes people behave more selfishly is a very odd concept to come up with in the first place.
A friend, Keelan Pontoni, would like to note, he says, I always invite white people to meetings when I'm around litter, effed up bikes, and old beer bottles. All the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, it's... just carry spares with him just for that.
As long as he's aware that, according to this Dutch researcher, that would make white people think less of him.
Yes.
The U.S. National Biodefense Science Board has told the U.S. government that to prepare for a bioterrorist attack, it should test a decades-old anthrax vaccine in children, as its effects in the young are unknown. In the event of an anthrax attack, the oral antibiotic ciprofloxacin can save lives by killing anthrax bacteria in the lungs. I guess that's the Cipro that we always hear about,
yes.
Is ciprofloxacin. But a few anthrax spores can lurk and germinate weeks later, so people must stay on the drug for 60 days, and this can result in nasty side effects. Vaccinating people immediately after exposure also kills late germinating spores, so permits shorter antibiotic treatments. The U.S. has stockpiled anthrax vaccine for precisely this purpose, but no one has ever tested what the vaccine does to children, which doses are effective and safe. A quarter of the U.S. population is aged under the age of 18. The National Biodefense Science Board was asked last April to advise whether the existing anthrax vaccine should be tested on children before any attack or simply given as an emergency measure if needed while data is gathered on safety and response. They voted for the first option last week. The government says it will carry out an ethical study of the situation, however, before deciding whether to test anthrax vaccine on children.
Doesn't it seem like whatever the anthrax vaccine is going to do to you is less bad than what anthrax itself is going to do to you?
Yeah. Again, though, people, weirdly enough, people get really touchy about testing vaccines on children.
Well, you know, look, that's the only way you're going to learn. If you don't test, you don't know.
If it was adults, they wouldn't mind so
exactly.
much.
Exactly. Well, let's be honest. I mean, you know, just the law of averages says that like 80% of those children aren't going to make it anyway. They can't all be winners.
Yeah. So the proposal, by the way, is to vaccinate children and then measure their immune response. But no one knows what level of immunity will protect humans against infection.
Well.
So they have no idea what the test would actually prove.
You start at none, and then you ramp up slightly, and you just see when they stop falling over.
Yeah, and then you start you give them the anthrax.
And just,
okay, Timmy's down. Bring in Jane.
You say, okay, I need you to open your mouth for a second. Bobby, get in here. All right, and then you just come back in like a week and see what's happened.
Dogs being walked by men are four times more likely to threaten and bite other dogs, and dogs on a leash are more likely to act aggressively than dogs off a leash. These are a couple of revelations about dog walking behavior from an extensive new study that examined how a dog's age, sex, and size, as well as the owner's sex and use of a leash, affect how canines act on their walks. The study, accepted for publication in the journal Applied Animal Behavior Science, surprisingly found that the sex of the owner had the biggest effect on whether or not the dog would threaten to bite another dog. Peter Rizak and his team wrote, "We propose that the occurrence of threat and biting in dogs on a walk may have some connection with aggressive tendencies and or impulsivity in people."
Now that does surprise me because it seems like it would be the opposite. It seems like if it was walking with a man that it would be less likely to be aggressive because it wouldn't feel that it had to be the alpha.
That kind of makes sense, but on the other hand, dogs do take their cues from humans. And they can read a lot of like body language and moods and things that we give off that we don't even realize we're doing.
So Max just, he picks up on my hatred of all humanity.
Right.
This is why he menaces babies when they come by.
That's why he's just vibrating with anger all of the time.
Excellent.
Because of you.
Well done.
Rizak, they also said, dogs are able to perceive subtle messages of threat emitted by another dog. Simultaneously, dogs are unusually skilled at reading human social and communicative behavior. By far the most frequent interaction of dogs of all ages in public places was body sniffing, which should not come as a surprise if you own a dog. Other expected conclusions, males sniff females more often. Males and females prefer to play with each other than with members of their own sex. Adult males mark the most. Puppies play together more than twice as often as adults and 11 times as often as old dogs. And dogs prefer to play with similarly sized individuals.
Do they just, like, pick up an issue of Dog Fancy at the vet and just go to, like, Stuff We All Know,
yeah.
Volume 7?
Well, those were the things, and those were the actual things that they expected to find. They knew that they would see that. But they've also found that the presence or not of a leash can make a difference on a dog's aggressiveness. Dogs off a leash sniffed one another more often than dogs on a leash, and they also threatened each other twice as often when they were on a leash.
Philo gets much more unnerved when he is on a leash than off. Which is odd because, you know, he's such a scaredy cat. And the leash tethers him to Lara, and he's a real, like, mama's dog. And so I would think that it would, and so I've always been surprised that it makes him more unnerved
maybe,
to be tethered to her.
Maybe it's a sense that he wouldn't be able to run away
which
if
he
something
would.
Threatened him.
He would not defend us at all. He would
no,
totally
run. No,
but if
he's run. On a leash, though, he can't get away.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He wouldn't stay to fight. He would not choose the side of, he's not even really choosing his own side. He just doesn't even really think. He just goes and hides under a bed.
So I imagine that is probably why dogs get more aggressive on a leash, too, as well. They get the fight or flight, you know, response, and they know they can't flee. So they just go, okay, I guess I'm going to have to bite you.
I had the proudest moment the other day when Lara had some of her hippie friends over, and they brought their children with them. And at one point, one of the younger children came up and said to his mother, "I don't think the little white dog likes me." And I beamed with pride.
Looked just over, there was Max just glowering at everyone.
Sitting in the corner, just snarling and just staring hatefully. It was a glorious night.
And finally, Google released its long-awaited Gmail application for Apple iOS on Wednesday, only to pull the iPhone and iPad app hours later after it became clear that it was less than a success. Google said in a short statement posted to its Twitter account, "The iOS app we launched today contained a bug with notifications. We have pulled the app to fix the problem. Sorry we messed up."
Yes, also, I'm waiting for that apology for the fact that they effed their Google Voice app as well. The Google Voice app, which is a thing that, like, I don't use all the time, but which was very handy. And then, I mean, it's tempting to say, like, well, Apple broke it with their iOS 5. But it's like, it's not like Apple doesn't, or any company doesn't make those things public. I mean, or, you know, doesn't give them to developers in advance. And Google, you know, is, they got the smarts there. And so
they
you
do.
Figure, but their Google Voice thing just completely got hosed with iOS 5, although I think it may be back as of this week.
Business Insider reports the app was riddled with bugs and just plain lousy.
riddled with bugs, just crawling with electronic aphids, and just plain lousy?
And just plain lousy.
Awesome.
Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus likewise exploded with comments from angry Apple users. CNET was able to quickly review the app before Google yanked it from the Apple App Store. They wrote, "Gmail does not appear in the notifications submenu that's new to iOS 5, nor is there a notifications entry when you access the Gmail app from the global iPhone settings menu. In addition to the notifications error, which signifies a coding mistake for the app's environment string, users are also disappointed that the Gmail app doesn't support multiple user accounts and archiving with gestures, and that the app isn't as graphically rich or as diverse from the Gmail web app, among other grievances."
It's almost like Google doesn't want Apple to succeed at running everything.
Huh.
Now, is
what
it,
the?
Because don't they, I mean, you would think they would, don't you ever like get an, I mean, this is not even an Apple thing, but you get it like an app or a game or a, you know, anything, and you're using it and it's so fundamentally broken, And you think, doesn't anyone at the company think, like, maybe we should turn this on and try it once? No, put it in the box. Send it out. And they just ship it to the store without ever trying it.
Well, and I don't want to go off on another whole Android versus iPhone thing. But my Android, which, of course, is the Google phone, is basically what it is, the Google phone. When I put the SIM card in, it took all my contacts from my mail and loaded it into my contacts folder, which includes the email addresses of everyone who I have ever exchanged email with ever on my Google account, whether or not I have their phone number or even want to actually talk to them in any way.
So wait, so it just imported all of your contacts from your Gmail account,
right,
and stuck them into the phone?
Into the phone. So I have. So if I go to contacts, I have.
Oh, you have to wade through
hundreds of email addresses.
Yes.
And so I keep going whenever, and I still do the thing where I go, I need to email someone. So I pick up the phone, and there's an icon that says email. So I hit email, and then I look and I go, okay, how do I send an email? And realize, no, the Android assumes that you're a Google person.
Right.
So is it, I'm the Google phone. So now to send an email, you go to contacts. And you pick the person, and then you say, I want to send them an email. You don't hit email. You hit email to read your email. You
that's
don't
really
hit your
confusing.
Email to compose an email.
No, that doesn't make any sense
No,
at all.
It doesn't.
No, that's...
So I don't get the crazy music for that. You just agreed. It doesn't make any sense.
It was doubling as ranty music.
Oh, okay.
No, but that is non-intuitive, the idea, because the thing should do what you think it's going to do. It's the only comment I'm going to make, because then otherwise it's going to seem like we're piling on. And I just, this is just a simple observation. This is just, that's all this is, because my wife has a Motorola Android, which, again, she's happy with. She likes it, and that's really what matters, because I'm not using it. She is. But she, on her Motorola Android, there is this icon that is, I think it's locked. It's always sort of there, and it's at the bottom middle of the screen. So it's right dead center in the middle of the screen, but at the bottom. And it looks for all the world like a keypad. It looks like it's the thing you press to bring up the phone dialer, but it's not. You press it.
No, it's applications.
Yeah, and it brings up the entire application screen. And I know if I bothered to count the number of tiny squares, I might be able to suss out that it's not a keypad. Although I don't really know, because I don't even know what's on. I don't even know how many buttons are on a keypad anymore, because they've added some like the asterisk and the hashtag. Like they have the pound sign have their own thing. Anyway, but that is, to me, that's the entire thing in a nutshell. That every single time I pick up her phone and try to dial with it, I press that thing because it looks exactly like a dialing pad. I'm just saying.
And every time I pick up my phone and try to make a call, I press email. Oh, I tried to send an email. I press email and go, why can't I? Oh, God, I forgot. Ah! Right. So there we go. That's all the science.
Someone says, none of this matters to me. I'm high.
Oh, okay.
All right,
well,
excellent.
You.
There
thank
you go.
Thank you, sir.
There's your science on the march for Thursday. November 3rd, 2011. By the way, if you're near a browser right now, you might want to, speaking of Google, because we were just, we might as well give you the good with the bad, just so, you know, compare the, you know, because I don't wish to be unbalanced about these things. If you go to Google, and this is not going to bring up balding spider porn or anything hideous, if you haven't done this already, Seamus tipped us up to this. Go to Google and type in, I don't think you have to quote it either. Do you still have to put things in quotes in Google?
No.
Is that a thing that I do because I'm old?
Yes.
Because when I search for stuff, I put the phrase in quotes.
No.
Because I never know if they're going to, look for... Because then otherwise it's a thing of, well, we found all the words on the page, just not together.
Oh.
And then it's going to give me some result that isn't, what I'm looking for.
I don't think it's...
Well, whatever. You're going to go to Google and type in, do a barrel roll.
I heard Greg talking about that earlier with
Sarah.
It is
pretty cool. It's nothing... ain't nothing fancy. It is kind of cool, though. It's just one of those things that Google does just to sort of be whimsical. It's Google's bemusement mode being turned on.
All right. Well, this is for our listener who's high. Fort Collins, Colorado has become the largest city in Colorado to just say no to medical marijuana. Question 300, which would prevent medical marijuana dispensaries and grow facilities from operating within city limits, passed by a margin of 53% to 47% on Tuesday evening, based on unofficial Larimer County election results. The ban will force 21 licensed medical marijuana businesses in Fort Collins to close within 90 days. 21? How big is Fort Collins, Colorado? Wow. No wonder they want it. everyone must be high there all the time.
100% penetration.
They've got 21 licensed dispensaries in their town.
Hold on. Let me just see if I had my Siri thing. I would just... How big is Fort Collins, Colorado? I'm going to find out the population right now. Hold on. How big is Fort Collins? You type barrel roll?
I'm doing it right now while you do that.
You got to be looking at the screen.
Okay. Do a barrel roll. Oh!
Isn't that weird?
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, the people who are high, and there's more than one, apparently. They're having their minds blown.
Yeah, all right.
All right. There you go. So, some guy got paid to do that.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right. Fort Collins, Colorado, according to the Intertron, is population... Okay, what would you imagine? There are... there's 21 marijuana dispensaries.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? What would you imagine the total population of Fort Collins, Colorado to be?
Well, the city of Portland is what? About... 750,000, 800,000, something like that.
Maybe.
I would say maybe 300,000.
It is 143,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so, wow. The contentious battle over question 300 pitted a coalition of well-funded shop owners against a group of concerned citizens led by retired police officer and former city mayor Ray Martinez. According to Martinez, the recent profusion of medical marijuana centers along the College Avenue business corridor has led to an increase in crime and drug use. Huh. College Avenue is where all of the marijuana businesses
are. That's hard to believe.
Fort Collins joins Loveland, Windsor, and Greeley among northern Colorado cities and the 75-plus communities statewide which have banned medical marijuana. On Colorado's western slope, voters in Palisade on Tuesday rejected a measure that would have closed Mesa County's only medical marijuana dispensary. So this other city
has one.
They have one, and they said, no, keep it open. This one, they have 21, which are open on College Avenue.
This really seems like what we need to do is we need to apportion these, sort of correctly. We need to prorate these across,
right.
You know, just to... Hey,
and also, we got to make sure that college kids get their marijuana illegally on the street from, like, a guy by a dumpster behind the 7-Eleven, just like we did when we were their age.
Exactly. And by we mean you.
Right.
Except you didn't go to college.
No.
But you visited. You just swung by.
I went to college. I didn't graduate from college, but I went to college.
Did you go to college just to meet the guy, like, behind the, in the alley, like, by the,
no,
by the bowling classroom?
No, I already knew that guy. I knew that guy from high school.
Hey, did your barrel roll thing work on, what browser are you using?
Firefox.
Somebody's claiming, this doesn't work on Firefox. That's
it worked on mine.
It's a Y piece, sir. And it also works on Safari. I just saw it work right now. By the way, Wikipedia claims that the Portland population, the metro population, which seems high to me, but maybe that's because I'm used to the radio industry definition of the metro area and not the like Atlas definition. Wikipedia claims the metro population of Portland is 2,300,000.
Well, that metro must include,
that must be
like
Beaverton or like outlying areas,
stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm used to that just meaning like the close in areas in the four quadrants. Doesn't really matter.
No. The people for the ethical treatment of animals are up in arms, unsurprisingly, about a contest at an annual event in the small Florida community of Terracea. This is in Manatee County. On November 12th, hundreds will gather at Seabreeze Park for the annual Mullet Smoke-Off. During the event, many will participate in a contest called the Mullet Toss, which is a game where contestants try to toss a dead mullet as far as they can toward targets like a toilet bowl. This is not sitting well with representatives of PETA. The organization's associate director, Chris Holbein, sent a fiery letter to organizers saying, "The mullet toss is a degrading and disrespectful waste of life, and it sends the message to children that it's acceptable to cause an animal to suffer a terrifying and painful death just for some cheap laughs."
What is a mullet?
It's a fish.
Okay, not okay. I was confused. So they're throwing it into
various targets, one of which is a toilet.
Well, it doesn't have to be dead.
Well,
it might hurt.
But it is dead. That's the thing.
But I mean, in other words, well, okay, but I guess my point is you could keep this if you threw a live mullet. Then everybody wins.
I guess. Well,
maybe you don't want to be thrown into a toilet, but I mean, how would we know?
Personally, I think that would be worse because then that really would hurt the fish.
Okay.
Now the fish isn't feeling any pain. The fish is dead.
These fish that died naturally?
Well, no.
Well,
but,
I'm just saying, who knows? I mean, on a movie set, if you're going to have even dead insects, they have to be insects that have already died.
Joe Doherty, a resident of Terracea, said, "If the event were torturing fish, I would feel absolutely different, but it's not. It's an animal that's already going to be deceased, and it has been a tradition on the island for many years."
Yeah.
They, PETA, do some very important work around the country, said Bill Berger. Well, we can't trust anyone in the story named Bill Berger.
No, German.
also, meat eater. He said, they do important work around the country and the world. Many of these efforts I support, but this is beyond the pale. Do not take away our mullet-tossing contest, he says. Organizers of the event said once the tossing contest is over, they take the fish and feed them to some of the other wildlife on the island. Last year, the smoke-off generated about $9,000. That money, each and every year, is used for preservation efforts on the island.
That's ironic. All right. Well, so there you go. Maybe this is a bit, but maybe it's a, maybe they're taking fish that have, you know, been kicked out on an ice floe by the other fish. They've been shunned because they're near the end of their lives anyway. Or maybe they're using that cute little fish mallet on them, you know, just before they give them a toss.
Maybe they just inject them with something that puts them into a nice, tranquil sleep.
Yes.
And then their heart slowly stops and they never know.
Exactly. Then their doors of perception are opened.
And then they go toward the light.
Exactly.
And they swim freely with all of the other fish under the Rainbow Bridge.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably not, though.
No. A teenager from China is eager to thank a Colorado doctor for successfully removing her brain tumor, and he did it without cutting open her skull. Yu Yu Wang is healthy and happy just 6 weeks out of surgery. She's a bright student, a talented pianist, and a very grateful young lady. CBS4... that's a TV station in Aurora, Colorado. Their health specialist, Kathy Walsh, paid a visit to Wang on Tuesday.
Really? Yes. Only on Tuesday?
She was practicing a Chopin waltz with skill and passion for what will be her thank you notes to Dr. Kevin Lillehei. At 14, she was diagnosed with a tumor on her pituitary gland, and she was having trouble. Her doctors in China offered to operate. She said, they can do the surgery, but must open the head. That's terrible.
We give you a rag to bite.
Wang's family was worried the surgery would leave her disabled, like cannot walk, and then cannot see very well, and then cannot take care of myself like that, Yu Yu Wang said. But Wang's aunt from Aurora, Colorado, proposed an alternative. She called her former husband, whose mother had a brain tumor, and it turned out it was the exact same spot as the mother's tumor was. And Wang's uncle, Ralph Grills, said... The tumor was successfully removed through her nose.
Why? Okay. What do you mean?
So Yu Yu had the same surgery in September at the University of Colorado Hospital, had the same kind of tumor also removed through her nose. Dr. Lillehei says he has done about 1,200 transnasal operations. And Wang said, the tumor gone, no more.
First of all, like 75 people have asked, is it true that Wang is a talented pianist?
Yes.
Okay.
She
also,
is.
The whole thing of taking the tumor out of her nose, is that where they're doing that Rose Kennedy thing of just sticking a fish hook up there and just pulling?
I think so.
Just
yeah.
going, hold on a second. This,
we got it.
You may feel a small tingle. And then Bravehearting her tumor right out of her face.
And she says, I smell colors.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So I guess there's that. It doesn't seem, I mean, I'm not saying I could do it, but it doesn't seem like that's a tremendous advance in technology because that is how they used to do lobotomies.
But again, apparently they don't, with a lobotomy, they weren't actually doing like delicate surgery. They were just basically sticking a crochet hook up your nose and kind of just whisking around until they made a mush of your frontal lobe. It wasn't really a delicate operation.
Things are going to go a little stupid here for a second and actually forever. So, okay. If you got any important numbers you need to remember, you might want to write those down and then... But I'm saying that was like 100 years ago, too. So it seems like if you had even rudimentary brain visualization technology, which
they may
not have in
don't
China.
Don't do it in China.
No, apparently.
No.
Although, I mean, they can't even make toys that aren't lethal there. So, I can't imagine what a thing that goes inside your brain, how much that would harm you there.
Now, they spend all their money on panda technology. They can't learn how to, like, take tumors out of people's noses.
I'm sorry. Ursine humping has taken up about, if you look at this pie chart, you'll see that it's 98% of our budget right now. So you have to, you're going to have to probably die this year. But next year, we might have a cure.
So it is now November 3rd, and Oregon growers have started shipping Christmas trees across the country and around the world.
Boop.
Seems a little early, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, no, because if people started buying them in December, then it's like they got to get shipped over. And I think some of them, they go by boat, right?
I guess.
Because they don't fly some of that stuff. Like Cheryl was saying that in Hawaii, they would get these trees. Of course, that they would breathe on, and then they would just fall apart. But they all came over by boat, and then they have to, like...
Like, every tree in Hawaii is like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Well, but not until you get it home. Because Charlie, like, he goes to the lot and it's just the one that's left, yeah. right? But I think she said that they would get them, and although it seems like now they could preserve them enough that they could send them a little bit later, but they would get them, they would prop them up, they would spray paint them green, I think, occasionally, but they would still be just dry, just like a husk, just like tinder. And then she said she would like prop it up in the corner of the house, and like nobody could touch it, because the minute you put like a strand of garland, it was just, poof, all the needles just fall to the floor.
Well, according to the Oregon Department of Agriculture, 2011 promises to be a good year for the Christmas tree industry. There are approximately 750 tree growers in Oregon, and they bring in nearly $100 million per year in revenue. Last year, Oregon shipped nearly 6.5 million trees, and most of the growers are located in the Willamette Valley.
That's right. Suck that, North Carolina.
Yeah. There's a significant international market for Oregon trees. Once again, growers are shipping a large number of trees to Mexico and to several Asian countries.
That's what I'm saying.
I hope we get. I want to go to the Christmas tree farm again this year.
Now, see, but last year you didn't seem to. Didn't you have? What was it? Your hip or your? I don't know. Your femur, head, or something was
also,
acting up.
And Patrick, that was right when Patrick was starting to get
sick. Oh, that's
right
when the keeling over was happening.
Yeah, and so he was like, he'd been sick and he was all weak and sad, and so. But and also just, you know, I'm lazy, and the idea of going and tromping around, you know, in the cold doesn't sound like a
particularly. Now, to be fair, there wasn't a lot of tromping. There was the. Did you go on the?
There's not a lot of tromping.
When you went up on the whatever the.
I did.
The
I
sort
went
of,
on the train the train
the train train
what, tram,
tram kind of thing.
Thing.
Yeah.
And you roll around and you go from like area to area, and then when you stop at the area where it has the kinds of trees you want, you get out and you pick one.
And if you're like me, then you let your wife chainsaw it down.
We just picked one and let the guy. But then they drive it back to home base for you, and you go and you match your tag with the tag on the tree, and you go, that one's mine.
Seriously, the first
it was awesome.
No, the first film I ever, the first video that I ever shot on my iPhone was of that baling machine where it goes and it twines the whole thing up, and they stick it in your car.
Yeah, that was a good day.
Those were good times.
And they had free hot chocolate and
That's
cider.
That's true. No,
and a
they
big
was...
fire outside.
Hey, it's 12:50. We should do some entertainment
yeah,
news.
Yeah, let's do that.
Hold on. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, November 3rd.
George Clooney will receive the Hollywood Actor Award at the 15th Annual Hollywood Film Festival and Hollywood Film Awards, which is presented by Starz Entertainment. Clooney stars in The Ides of March and is being honored for his work in the upcoming movie The Descendants. The event takes place on October 24th. TMZ reports singer Chris Brown and Bow Wow reportedly shelled out over $15,000 last week at a Florida strip club called the King of Diamonds. Bow Wow is part of Brown's current fame tour. So $15,000 at a strip club.
That's just for the bone setting.
Mm. Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane has expressed a desire to do a new series on the Star Trek universe. In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, he said, I don't know who would give me the keys to that car, but I'd love to see that franchise revived for television in the way it was in the 1990s. Very thoughtful, smartly written stories that transcend the science fiction audience.
Well, they've already got him redoing. He's rebooting the Flintstones, apparently in a non-ironic fashion. For
TV?
Yeah, for rollout, I don't know, I think in like 18 months or something. The Flintstones is going to be coming back with him as the showrunner for that.
Huh.
Because he's... I have such mixed feelings about Family Guy. Family Guy is just, depending on what time of day it is, my thoughts about Family Guy are likely to be 180 degrees, you know, from what they might be the rest of the afternoon. I've come around on him too, because there was years and years ago when I initially just loathed Family Guy so much. When it first came on, I just despised it. I just, with everything in me. And then by association, I hated him. I mean, you know, I'd never really seen him or read any interviews with him. I didn't know anything about him. He was the Family Guy creator, and so therefore I loathed him. But then I saw some interviews. In fact, the first thing I saw that kind of brought me around on Seth MacFarlane was when he was on Dinner for Five with Favreau.
Yeah.
And he was really, really great. And then I read several interviews with him, and then Sarah convinced me. She kind of browbeat me into watching Family Guy, and she gave me a DVD set over the week, and I don't know, I watched like 12 episodes in a row or something, and I still run real hot and cold in that show, but I like him a lot. I've read some of the, you know, and it's just, and he's like George Clooney in that he walks that fine line between being an activist and giving money to causes he supports and speaking out for things that he believes in, but he's not like, he's a dick about it, but just enough, and not so much that he becomes like one of the Dixie Chicks, where you're just sort of like, oh, just go home. Just go home and close the door. So, plus he put out that big band album.
Yeah, I saw him on a British TV special. It was some big band orchestra playing, doing a concert and it was for British television, and he was one of the guest vocalists.
Yeah, yeah, he put out this whole Nelson Riddle type album.
HBO has renewed Boardwalk Empire for a third season. Season 2 of the series, which is headlined by Steve Buscemi, premiered September 25th. Following a triumphant first season, I was eager to see what Terry Winter, Martin Scorsese, and the rest of their stellar team had in store, and they continue to surpass our highest expectations, said HBO president Michael Lombardo. The response from the media and our viewers has been extremely gratifying. The latest Die Hard installment, titled A Good Day to Die Hard, is set for a Valentine's Day 2013 release, with Bruce Willis once again heading the franchise as John McClane. This time out, McClane will travel to Moscow to get his son out of jail, but finds himself trying to stop yet another terrorist plot. Max Payne and Behind Enemy Lines filmmaker John Moore is directing the picture. Mariah Yeager, the 20-year-old woman who has reportedly filed a paternity suit against 17-year-old Justin Bieber, is now the target of death threats by enraged Bieber fans.
You have to do so little. I think they are the most crazed fan base yet. They really have upped the entire... Because that apparently... It's like there's some unholy thing happening between the Bieber people and the Juggalo people, too. Because the Bieber folks have... And this isn't like the first time. It's like any time anything either happens to him that is bad or when he doesn't get something that is good. Like if there's some, you know, and the award for best actor in a major motion picture, and if it's not Justin Bieber, like they immediately go to whoever, you know, whoever won, and they just go, George Clooney, you will die! And they just issue death threats to everyone.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I mean, it's like they don't even start with like a disfiguring or a maiming threat. They go right to like, we're going to kill you and your whole family.
Well, since the news broke that the unemployed Yeager claimed to have had unprotected sex with Bieber backstage at his October 25th, 2010 concert in L.A., Facebook pages have sprung up slamming his accuser. But the worst of the venom appears to be on Twitter. User Becca Lindsay wrote, I could kill this bitch. Really, she messes with my baby. She is so dead. Another who goes by Heron Ortiz JDB writes, I should give you a device. Well, go away before millions of believers kill you.
I should give you a device?
I don't know what that means. I think it means she was giving her advice.
Oh, I see. Okay.
A Twitter user...
give you an oscilloscope right now.
Using the name Turkish Belieber, wrote Marion Yeager, getting her name wrong, is so dead, and linked to several Tumblr animations containing even more threats. Roses are red, violets are blue, Mariah Yeager, we're gonna kill you, tweeted Ceci Kidrani. Other Yeager haters, meanwhile, are calling her everything from a fame whore whose name, quote, sounds like a disease, to a lying F.
Here's the thing. This is why it's probably right that the universe did not give me Justin Bieber-style fame, especially at that age, because I would abuse that instantly. Like, if I had a legion of people... If I somehow had a legion of people online who were offering to kill my many enemies, I would take advantage of that instantly, just so everyone's aware. So don't do that. Don't offer to do... Because if you were him, and you just had, you know, some army of, like, 10,000 fembots that are out there just, like, willing to kill on your baby, be like, have at it. Go ahead. By the way, I
abuse people who are willing to buy me coffee. I would certainly abuse it if people, you know.
This free phone is terrible! Seamus has put forward the name Bibelos for
I like that.
Justin Bieber's followers.
I wish I'd thought of that before Halloween. I could have been a Bibelo.
Hey, speaking of things we just talked about, so to clarify, many people have, I got like 9 emails about this. Is it true that George Clooney got... The Hollywood Actor Award?
Yes.
Is that like a made-up, like a placeholder award?
Later? It's one of those stupid awards that, like, you know, like Starz Entertainment came up with it. Like, whenever some company wants to get, like, more press coverage, they make up some stupid award. So, like, 15 years ago, somebody came up with the Hollywood Film Festival and Hollywood Film Awards, which no one pays any attention to and nobody cares what it is. And they give out a Hollywood Actor Award.
Okay.
And no one ever, ever, ever cares about it at all. But every year, it's announced.
All right. Hey, for those of you going to be sticking around for the Rick Emerson Show, which is next hour, today we have a Geek Watch coming up and a Taser Watch coming up. We'll also talk to the creator of one of the five winners of the Geek Lantern Carving Contest. We'll talk to the creator of the Death Star Pumpkin of Death Squash. That's going to be next hour at rickemersonshow.com. In the meantime, in between time, this brings to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high over the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provider by Mr. Thomas Gale, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. I'll have a brief musical interlude here. We'll play some of Mr. Seth MacFarlane's album, which is called Music is Better Than Words. So we'll do that here in the intervening time, and the Rick Emerson Show begins around 20 minutes from now at rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again tomorrow, Friday noon, for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?